We are in Genesis 23. Genesis 23. And this is Sarah's death and her burial, the circumstances surrounding that, the purchase of a burial plot. This is this is an interesting passage, just in its presence in the life of Abraham, but it really shows how much the promises of God have taken hold of him, and so that he would make a decision like what he's going to do and be persistent in it. So it's the whole chapter that we'll try to do this evening. So I'll read all of chapter 23. Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died at Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And Abraham rose up from before his dead and said to the Hittites, I am a sojourner and a foreigner among you. Give me property among you for a burying place, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. The Hittites answered Abraham, hear us, my lord, you are prince of God among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will withhold from you his tomb to hinder you from burying your dead. Abraham rose and bowed to the Hittites, the people of the land. And he said to them, if you are willing that I should bury my dead out of my sight, hear me and entreat for me Ephron, the son of Zohar, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owns. It is at the end of his field. For the full price, let him give it to me in your presence as property for a burying place. Now Ephron was sitting among the Hittites, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of the Hittites, all who went in at the gate of his city. No, my lord, hear me. I give you the field, and I give you the cave that is in it. In the sight of the sons of my people, I give it to you. Bury your dead. Then Abraham bowed down before the people of the land, and he said to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, But if you will hear me, I give the price of the field. Accept it from me, that I may bury my dead there. Ephron answered Abraham, my lord, listen to me. A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver, what is that between you and me? Bury your dead. Abraham listened to Ephron, and Abraham weighed out for Ephron the silver that he had named in the hearing of the Hittites, 400 shekels of silver, according to the weights current among the merchants. So the field of Ephron in Machpelah, which was to the east of Mamre, the field with the cave that was in it, and all the trees that were in the field throughout its whole area, was made over to Abraham as a possession in the presence of the Hittites, before all who went in at the gate of his city. After this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah, east of Mamre, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. The field and the cave that is in it were made over to Abraham as property for a burying place by the Hittites. All right, so what do you observe? What sticks out to you as confusing or a question that you have?
It's interesting that he didn't accept the gift.
Oh, okay, good, yeah. So he insists on purchasing. It seems significant. Yeah. What else?
It wasn't just a meeting between the two of them. It was in front of the people of the land.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
So that everybody knows.
Yeah, so, yeah, you have witnesses. Yeah. Oh, good.
They call him a prince of God.
Yeah, prince of God. How does Abraham identify himself?
Sojourner and foreigner.
That's, yeah. Good. the recognition from the Hittites, but then also recognition from Abraham about who he is.
It's interesting that he mentioned the amount of money in there.
Ephron?
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems to be a little bit of an embarrassment that we're even having this conversation.
The way it sounds, it's like, it's $5, like, you know, like, yeah. It's not a lot of money.
We're both rich, like, why
right.
are we, are, yeah.
Yes, like,
yeah. It's actually a pretty significant money, or a significant amount, we'll get to that.
Okay,
but
like,
but,
you
yeah.
have a lot
so,
of money. Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah.
Is this with, does this take place within the land of Canaan that God
yeah.
promised Abraham?
Yeah, it, this takes place, yeah, it does.
Hebron's like south of Jerusalem.
Yeah, it's south southwest of Jerusalem, about 9 miles, I think. Yeah.
No, Jerusalem.
19 miles. 19 miles southwest of Jerusalem, and it's near the plate, the Oaks of Mamre.
You've heard that before?
Yes, we have.
Why does Abraham consider himself a sojourner?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Hebrews 11 picks up on that. So, yeah, that's a really good question. Maybe a really significant question too, Aaron.
Can you answer?
Yeah, later.
No. Of course.
That's, well, I mean, that's part. Like, I can't give it all away.
Answer it in a few weeks whenever he does Hebrews 11.
No. We'll do it here. Good. Anything else?
Sarah died.
Sarah died. I mean, yeah, that's a really big deal. She died.
Yep.
Yeah.
So my footnote on 19, verse 19. At the same place, Abraham, Isaac, Rebekah, Leah, and Jacob were all buried.
Yes.
So this is a pretty important place.
Pretty important place. It makes a statement. This is that in part, Aaron, answers your question about the sojourner and foreigner. Yep. Good. Anything else?
How long would Abraham have been? I'm trying to think of how long he would have been in the land.
Yeah, so they left when he was 75, and he's about 137 now, so that's 62 years.
Right.
Yeah. Isaac is about 37 right now. Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have somewhere.
Right.
He
has water rights.
To
yeah.
bury.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So he's basically. He's nomadic. He moves from place to place based on the needs of his household. And because he's so big and also because of his history, he's respected. He's not messed with. You see that really with Abimelech, like, I'm not touching, I'm not doing anything wrong. So God's protection and God's blessing is definitely on him. And it seems that he is a blessing to others. Wherever he goes as well, where he's received well. So, but he doesn't have a place to call his own, and yet the whole area is promised to him and to his descendants. Yeah. So I guess what we should think about just as far as I'll give you the takeaway, the so what up front. How do you make a statement when in the midst of death? What kind of statement do you want to make when a death in the family happens? Or if you're thinking forward to your own death and making and having people, preparing people for your own death and the things that you want happening at your service, what kind of statement can you make? That's what's going on here. Abraham is making a statement about his future and about Sarah's future and about his descendants' future. That's what's going on here. So, and that's why it's significant what he calls himself, but then also what he does in light of how he sees himself. So, the passage really breaks down into verses 1 and 2 with the death of Sarah, and then you have verses 3 through 16, which is these cycles of conversations, discussions, negotiations between Abraham and the Hittites, or the sons of Heth, and then the deed language is in verses 17 to 20. So the death of Sarah and the burial of Sarah is kind of brackets, or the burial place of Sarah brackets the action that's going on. The action that's going on is this discussion at the gate, which would be in this area, Hebron, Kiriath Arba. So that's the action is happening at the gate there in verses 3 to 16 with this discussion. So Sarah lived 127 years. So she was 60 years old when she and Abram left their homeland, their family. And then it says that these were the years of the life of Sarah, almost to make you like slow down. Like chapter 22 is so, it's pointing to the future with the with Rebecca being mentioned, and we know Rebecca's significance for the promises, for the promised line, and then even before that, Isaac, Abraham offering up Isaac, Abraham's faith is proven, and then all of a sudden Sarah dies, and just so we don't miss it. It says these were the years of the life of Sarah. Like, go back, make sure you read that. Sarah died, and she was 127. Now, think back through. You have to go back all the way to Genesis 1 and just scan it in your mind. Is there any other woman who plays the kind of role in Genesis that that Sarah does? Anybody similar? Anybody comparable? Comparable?
Eve.
Eve, yeah. Eve is one who she speaks, and not just in the garden during the temptation, but also when she gives birth to Cain, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord, or maybe even the Lord himself. And so she's a speaker. There's not a whole lot of women who are speakers so far, and there won't be very many. Although there will be increasingly so. Each of the patriarchs' wives will be speakers and play a significant role. But beyond, outside of Eve, Sarah's really, and even in comparison to Eve, Sarah has played this humongous role, and she is, and rightly so, because she's a recipient of the promises and an active participant in the fulfillment of the promises. Hebrews 11 points out she received conception past her childbearing age. She's significant. She's a big deal. But now she's dead. So how does faith respond to death? Especially when the promises of God have to do with something that's in the future. So that sets the tone for this chapter. And we're told where she dies. She dies at Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So in the land of Canaan is another way to say what?
The promised land.
The promised land, yeah. This would be significant for the Israelites who are hearing Genesis or reading Genesis. Like, that land in there across the Jordan, where you're going, Sarah's buried there. And all this event happened in there. Now, Kiriath Arba does come up later on. I think it's significant that this is a place that's given to Caleb. Who's Caleb?
One of the spies.
Yeah, one of the spies. Two faithful spies, right? The other one was Joshua. And Caleb is the one who's singled out because Joshua is going to take over leadership from Moses. And Caleb, after they take over the land, after they conquer most of the land or large portions of the land, this place is given to Caleb as a family inheritance. It's also a place where the Levites are given land, pasture land around there. But Caleb is given this place. He actually chooses it. And so this is a place that in the future is just dripping with faith, faithful people. And so the same kind of thing, it's dripping with faithful people, and they've nearly always been there. Now the being in Hebron, this is also the place where the Oaks of Mamre were. And this is the place in Genesis 13:18 and also 18:1, where first of all in chapter 13 verse 18, this is where it might be actually chapter no it's chapter 13. So after Abram goes into Egypt and then comes back, and Lot chooses the valley where Sodom and Gomorrah are. And then God says to Abram, go all over the land and see, this is the place that I have given to you. And he ends up settling down in this area where the Oaks of Mamre are, Hebron. And he builds an altar there and he worships. This is also the place where God meets with him in chapter 18 to say Sarah's going to have a child, a son, next year, this time next year, and that's also right before the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. So this is a place that is meaningful as far as the promises go. It has to do with the land in chapter 13. It has to do with the son in chapter 18. And so, again, the place is dripping with faith in Abraham's experience, and it will be in the future. And before we actually get into the action, it's important to note this too. Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. So based on the history of Abraham and Sarah, why would this be an important thing to note? I think we take it for granted, but don't take it for granted. Don't put yourself in your own marriage, or in what we expect marriage to be. Put yourself in a different culture where marriages are sometimes arranged, and then also are a lot of times arranged, and then also put yourself in the situation where, okay, Abraham and Sarah have not exactly had the greatest of times together. When you think of chapter 16. Does Abraham even care about her? Well, this would settle that, right? He mourns for her. He weeps for her. This is a great loss for him, for Abraham. So, the death of Sarah. It's a significant point, and it's really a turning point in the book of Genesis.
So you're saying we should love the wife in spite of her sinfulness.
Yes, I'm saying that you should love your wife as Christ loved the church. And Christ loves us oh so much in spite of our sinfulness. So,
there's a marriage conference.
That is exactly. Yeah. That is, and your wife, and our wives should respect us. So even Peter says, fear us. So, I mean, it's a good trade-off, right? We love them and they fear us. Linda, I'm sorry. He did it. I mean,
I'm used to it.
He told me to say all those things. Anyway, yeah, there is a marriage promise, so maybe I'll get my act together. What's
I really
that?
Love that.
Yes, I know you
I
do.
Respect.
Okay, so Abraham rose up before his dead and said to the Hittites, there are three groups of Hittites in the Bible, or the sons of Heth. Actually, they're not in ancient Near East history. There's three groups that are known as the Hittites. Two don't really appear in the Bible. One was located in modern-day Turkey. Another one was located in Syria. The group in Syria had actually sought refuge in its modern-day Syria. It wasn't then. There was this great empire in Turkey, and then they came down. That was broken up. That was conquered, and the remnants of that group came down to Turkey and actually basically became a second group of Hittites. That's not who we're talking about, that great Hittite empire. This is a different one, and that's why I think LSV does this for sure. I'm not sure if the NAS does. Talks about the sons of Heth, or says sons of Heth, yeah. So, and this would go back to Genesis 10, 15, and the Table of Nations. They come from the line of Shem, so they are Semite. They're coming from the same line as Abraham. And they were in this area. This was a big deal back in the, I think, the early 20th century, maybe the late 19th century, where all sorts of unbelieving scholars were saying that the Hittites were a made-up people. These Hittites were made-up people, and then they found archaeological evidence that they were there, and the Bible ended up being right the whole time. So Abraham is going up. Now, we need to note the way that this is introduced. Each time Abraham speaks, he's going to be introduced as doing something, motioning in some way, some kind of body language, and that's a transition into a new part of the speech cycles. But it's basically Abraham talks, and then he's responded to, and then Abraham speaks again, and then he's responded to, and Abraham speaks a third time, and he's responded to, and he gets what he wants. What he wants is property, but how he identifies himself. This is who I am. I'm a sojourner and a foreigner among you. Evidence for this is that he doesn't have any land. He goes from place to place. He is very wealthy, but at the end of the day, he's an immigrant. I mean, another way to put this is that he's an immigrant. So he's really at a human level, he's at the mercy of the people of the natives there. He doesn't have any legal rights that would be due to him as being a citizen there, which citizenship is a different thing than what in this area, this time in this area, and what we know of it now. But he's acknowledging, I'm an immigrant. This is what Hebrews picks up on later on in Hebrews 11, that he acknowledged himself to be a sojourner, and that when it came to opportunities for him to have a city, to live in a city, to seek a city, he didn't, right? And the preacher of Hebrews says it's because he was seeking the city that has foundations. And so this is in part where Hebrews 11 draws that truth out. So this is who I am. This is how I see myself. I am a sojourner and a foreigner among you. And just think, like, he has, like, so when I think of Abraham, more and more, I think of like Wardcraft. Like, think of the big old business, very wealthy, except he doesn't have a house. Doesn't have a house with a pool, and he goes from place to place. But he just, you know, commanding presence. And so he owns a lot of stuff, but he doesn't own any land. So what is he after? He goes up and he's going to get, he wants to get a place to bury, a burying place that I might bury my dead out of my sight. So this is what the Hittites are going to pick up on. Give. In what sense does Abraham mean give? Or in what sense are we going to assume that he means give? So give me property among you for a burying place that I may bury my dead out of my sight. A burial place, just talk about this for a moment, securing a burial plot in the land, it reflects Abraham's faith in God's promise that he's going to perpetually possess the land. So what, I meant to look this, get a picture for you, but actually if you have an ESV study Bible, it'll be in there. But a burial plot, not in this chapter, but in a different place. So a burial plot is basically a tomb. So it's not like a grave site. It's a tomb cut into a rock. That's why a cave is included in the language later on. It's a tomb that's cut into the rock, or it's a cave there, and it's converted for the purpose of housing the dead. The bodies of the deceased would be placed onto these shells that would also be cut into the rock. And then they would be left there until the body decomposed and there was nothing left except for the bones, and then those bones would be collected, possibly put into to its own box, and then put in the back of the tomb. And so when you're buried with your family. You're buried with your ancestors. And this seems to be like when Abraham is buried in Genesis 25:8, and then when others die and are buried, the Bible says something like he was gathered to his people. This burial place seems to be what that has in mind is that that this is where this family or this part of the family is buried, and it makes a statement. This burial plot will it makes a statement of actually permanent, of actual permanency and possession. And then also, in Abraham's case, expectation regarding the land, that this won't be the only piece of land that that he owns, but he'll in fact own the whole thing as an inheritance along with his descendants. And so this is a big deal for Abraham, because he's once again acting in faith on God's promises. He's not sending Sarah's body back to Haran, where they came from. This is their homeland, even though they're strangers, even though they're foreigners here. So that's his intent. That's what he's after, is give me property. And the Hittites answer, they answer a little cheekily, but hear us, my lord. So like you call yourself a sojourner and a stranger, but my lord, so you have authority. You're a prince of God. Translations, what? I think there are different translations for this, right? What?
Mighty prince.
Jude, what does LSB say?
Mighty prince.
Okay. This saying, my lord, that's a recognition of honor, but then also saying Prince of God especially would say, we know that God's with you. This is similar to what Abimelech said to Abraham back in chapter 21. I know that God is with you. He blesses you in whatever you do. So you may see yourself as a stranger, a sojourner, and a foreigner, but we recognize you as this Prince of God. And so, because of that, bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will withhold from you his tomb to hinder you from burying your dead. So what did they just offer to him?
Free tomb.
The best. Yeah, a free tomb, right? So they interpret the give that Abraham says back in verse 4, right here. They interpret that as just, well, he's just looking, he just wants a place to bury, right? Or that's how they're interpreting it. Is that what Abraham wants?
No.
No, he's going to make that clear. But but so he's giving, he's getting an offer. Now, why would, well, let's just see how Abraham responds before we ask a question. So Abraham rose and bowed to the Hittites. So this means that this is going into number two, speech cycle number two. Abraham rose and bowed to the Hittites, the people of the land. We already know they live there. Why, Moses, are you saying people of the land?
It's their land.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, this could say to the Israelites, whose land? Whose land? Also an ironic statement, perhaps. But this is about where Abraham is in God's plan, in the history of God's plan. But it's a reminder that this is involving the land promises. So it's these redundant statements that you can easily glance over it. You can just, okay, it's there. But it doesn't have to be there. If it were not there, then you wouldn't miss it. But because it is there, it slows you down. It makes you think, like, and why? Why should we know that they're the people of the land? Well, it's because this is about the land promises. They are speaking. Abraham is going to be speaking to those who currently possess the land, but they won't always. So his response is, and he said to them, if you are willing that I should bury my dead out of my sight, hear me. So there's this like, you listen to me. No, you listen to me. No, you listen to me. No, you listen. Hear me and entreat for me Ephron, the son of Zohar, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owns. It is at the end of his field. For the full price, let him give it to me in your presence as property for a burying place. So a couple of things that are going on here. Okay, so you've conceded that I should get a burial place, right? Mm-hmm. I should get a plot. All right? You've conceded that. But that's, I'm not interested in a gift. I'm interested in a specific plot of land. It's Ephron's. We don't know who Ephron is outside of this. And actually, Abraham doesn't necessarily recognize him or know who he is because they're in this group. And we'll see that in verse 10, sitting at the gate. But there's a specific plot of land that's at the end of the field, and then it's for the full price. So for the full price, let him give it to me. So Abraham clarifies, this is about me purchasing a place. So they say, hey, we'll give it to you. Why doesn't Abraham take that offer?
Because he needs land.
Okay, he needs land for the burial.
Because when he's gone, they could say we gave it to Abraham and now it's ours again.
Right, yeah. It's not actually deeded over to him. And so it's not a permanent place, it's a temporary place. It's still owned by somebody else. Mm-hmm. And when that person or that person's descendants get into a hard bind economically, well, I've got this land, I can sell it, right? And there goes Sarah with it, right? So he doesn't want to be given the land because it doesn't do anything permanent. It's just a temporary thing.
And it was kind of specific in 6 that none of us will withhold you from you his tomb to hinder you from burying your dead. So just the tomb, not necessarily.
Yeah, not the land around. Yeah, yeah. It's just you get the burial, you get the grave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Abraham gets a little bit more pointed. He gets specific. in what he's saying that he wants, and then he also specifies who he wants it from. And so now we see that Ephron is there. So he's sitting there among the Hittites, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of the Hittites. So this is public. Of all who went in at the gate of the city, so it's public, and this has legal jurisdiction. So the gate of the city, this is the place where the leaders of the city, the elders of the city, those who were in charge, and then also would sit and you know maybe decide disputes. But then also they would be there to for any kind of transactions that would happen. Can you think of another place, another time in the Bible, in the Old Testament, where a legal land transaction happens at a gate? Ruth and Boaz. Yeah, Boaz. So remember, when you buy the land, Naomi's land, you also get Ruth as a wife.
Right.
And the guy who doesn't have a name says, well, I don't want that because then my descendants won't have a name. Like, well, look at what you just did to yourself. And Boaz, who yet sacrifices his own name for Naomi, for Naomi's line, ends up having a name that's in the line of Jesus. Anyway, that's an extra add-on or whatever. But this makes it legal. This makes it public. You have witnesses. And Ephron tries, he wants to do the same kind of thing. No, Lord, hear me. No, my Lord, hear me. I give you the field, not give you for a price. I give it to you. I give you the field. I give you the cave that is in it. In the sight of the sons of my people, I give it to you. Bury your dead. Like, this is such a great offer. We don't even have to talk about money. Just use the spot. And so it's not just the Hittites as a whole, but it's also one particular Hittite.
Wouldn't that have been just as binding as paying money for it? I mean, isn't that considering giving the deed over to him?
No, because there wouldn't be any legal deed that would be written out. And there wouldn't be anything handed over. It's just, you can use it. Almost similar to, actually really similar to what happened with the well at Beersheba. Abraham has water rights, but those are only Isaac or Jacob, one of the two. I think Isaac has to come back in and reassert those water rights because he doesn't own the land. So Abraham's still in the same spot with this. The reason why that we've gone through, this is the second time that we've gone through one of the Hittites saying, no, I give it to you. Part of the reason that this is going on is that in order to buy land, you have to own land. So in ancient Near Eastern culture, typically, it's characteristic of this time, during Abraham's time, that in order to own land, or in order to buy land, you have to own land. So what does that end up doing to the market?
Restricting?
Yeah, restricting access to who can own land, right? It becomes this good old boys club, right? And so there's hesitation and reluctance to let Abraham purchase the land because he's not in the club, mm-hmm. right? So there's reluctance there. It's also awkward because Abraham keeps, like, he's not taking this gift, temporary use, for an answer. So it's becoming more and more awkward. And it's funny that this is, it's ancient Near East, but if, in certain cultures, and I think this is true in the Middle East today, that it's having this kind of conversation where you're trying to be firm on where you're at and you don't want to press and you want to be polite and things like that. that it's a very uncomfortable situation to be in, and like, and you don't, you just, so you, you're, and that's, that informs what Ephraim is about to say. It's like, I really don't want to talk about this, but there are ways to get deals done where you're, it doesn't sound like, you know, this business transaction has happened already, and it's an interesting cultural thing that's going on here. But so that's this end of the second cycle, and now we have the third one. Then Abraham bowed down before the people of the land. So again, the people of the land, and also remember that Abraham is, he's making these physical gestures, that he's, so he is making it, he is not doing anything that would, in his actions or in his words, that would give these guys an opportunity to outright say no, because for some kind of cultural taboo or no-no or anything like that. And so this is deferent. He's showing deference. He's being polite. All of these things, but he's being intense. He continues to push this button. And so, and you have the people of the land happen twice in verse 12 and verse 13. So again, this is a reminder, this is about the land. And he says, if you will hear me. So again, this back and forth on the hear me. I give the price. So he puts it together. I give the price of the field. Accept it from me that I may bury my dead there. What has Abraham just done as far as giving the, saying, I give you the price? What has he just done as far as making an offer?
I'm buying it,
but he doesn't put a number.
He still asked them to name the price.
Yes. Right. So he's basically saying, here's a blank check. Mm-hmm. So because his intent is to bury Sarah there. And Ephron answered Abraham, my Lord, so again, my Lord, listen to me, going back and forth again, a piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver, what is that between you and me? I mean, come on, we're all wealthy, like we have so much stuff, this is such a minor thing, come on, bury your dead. So what does Ephron do there? He does two things. One, he does name the price, but two, he also saves face. Like he put the price in there, but he didn't make a big deal of it, right? So he's really in this awkward situation that Abraham has forced him in into it. Just, I'm not going to haggle with you. Just, all right, here's the price. Now, 400 shekels of silver, this would be about 10 pounds of silver. And the annual income, average annual income that we can surmise.
Half an ounce, it says.
Yeah, almost half an ounce, two-fifths of an ounce. And so the annual income was 10 shekels. All right, so 400 shekels, I don't know why I put the weight in there, but it just, I guess, 10 pounds of silver. That's a lot, right? But the annual income is 10 shekels. So if it's 400 shekels, math people, how many years of annual income is that?
40
years. I mean,
yeah. But that's for an average person.
What?
Abraham wasn't average.
Right. I mean, he can afford this, and this is why he does it. But it's, no. So the question is this a fair amount?
No, it's a high price for the field.
Yeah.
Right. So I would lean toward this is a high price for the field, because it's at the end of this plot of land that Ephron owns, but at the same time we're not given dimensions for how big it is.
Yeah.
So we don't know, which actually opens up to us. Abraham doesn't care how much it costs him. He's operating on the basis of faith. And he's looking to make a statement about the future of his family in the land. And so it doesn't matter how much it costs. He is going to pay it. He could have said 1,000 shekels of silver, and he would have paid it.
And doesn't that show to the love that he had for his wife?
I mean, I would say so. I mean, love for, but he also knows that he's going to be buried there. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just, it's not his wife and his descendants.
Yeah.
This is a place for his family. Mm-hmm. And it's a permanent place. He owns it. His descendants, it will be inherited by his descendants. So love for the wife, but it's more about this permanency. In light of how Genesis 12 through 25 goes with the land promise and the seed promise, it's more focusing on Abraham's faith there.
What surprised me is Abraham being a Jew, you think he'd want to get a little cheap.
Jew him down. Jew him down, baby.
Yeah, well, I guess when you're operating by faith, that may change some things.
Yeah.
Okay, so Abraham listened. So remember how it's been saying, hear me, listen to me, hear me, hear me, hear me. Well, Abraham listened, right? And he weighed out for Ephron the silver that he had named in the hearing of the Hittites. So again, public, legal, 400 shekels of silver according to the weights current among the merchants. So this is, it's just standard measurement. By the way, these things, they seem kind of off, but it's his, like, this is one of those places where you think, did this really happen? And this is one of just the phrase, it's just a phrase that makes a historical statement. Like, this was what was current to what was current in the day. That's how that was weighed. That's how that was measured. And so this is one of those places where it says, hey, remember that the Bible is history. It's historical. It happened. And our faith is actually based upon real history. And theology is actualized in history. So that ends the cycle. Abraham has made the purchase. And now we actually get the deed language. So the deed to the land is actually in the Bible here. So the field of Ephron in Machpelah, which was to the east of Mamre. So remember the oaks of Mamre. The field with the cave that was in it and all the trees that were in the field throughout its whole area was made over to Abraham as a possession. So it becomes his. He's the owner. Before all who went in at the gate of his city, this is legal, this is public. And after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah, east of Mamre. That is Hebron, this place of faith in God's promises. And that's in the land of Canaan, so land of promise. The field and the cave that is in it were made over to Abraham as property for a burying place by the Hittites. So it becomes Abraham and his family. So the deed is here. It's part of Scripture. So I mean, just this 17 through 17 and 18, and possibly 20 as well, but definitely 17 and 18, it's a legal document, which is pretty amazing that, okay, part of inspired Scripture, God's Word, is this deed to the land, right? And so Abraham gets a place to bury his wife, and also where he will be buried. So in the future, Rich, you had read your note, right, about who's going to be buried here?
Yeah.
Can you read that again?
Not only Sarah, but Abraham, Isaac, Rebecca, Leah, and Jacob were buried there.
Yep.
That's got some references.
Yeah. So as far as the patriarchs go, This is a who's who, right? This burial place is makes a statement that this is their place. This is their land, and it makes a statement about the confidence that Israel should have in their future in the land. So it makes this huge statement. Now, this isn't the only place where well-known Israelites are going to be buried. So you have Joseph later on. He's buried in a field at Shechem that Jacob had purchased from the sons of Hamor. And remember that he says on his deathbed, "Do not bury me here. Take my bones with you when you leave." And that's still, you know, about 400 years from that point. Take me with you when you leave, right? Hebrews 11 brings that up as well. And so these burial plots inside the land, they made a statement. This is ours. This is ours, according to God's promise. So it was a statement of faith. And so the other thing to think about this here is that is that Jesus didn't own a burial plot, right? He's Isaiah 53:9, he's with a rich man in his death, but he's not buried in a tomb that he owns, right? And so just think of the creator of everything is not buried in a place that he owns. And of course,
he wasn't
going to
stay in that tomb.
He wasn't going to stay in that tomb, which also makes it's the other side of the coin. Like, he didn't need one. He owns everything, but he still owns everything as one who's alive.
He became poor so we could become rich.
That's right. That's right. So this is another place where you have faith and hope persisting until God's promises are fulfilled. And I think that a good place to end tonight would be to go over to Hebrews 11, verses 9 and 10. So by faith, he, Abraham, went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. He didn't go out and take the land. He didn't go out and conquer the land, because that wasn't God's command or God's promise for him. He lived by faith, even to this extent, living in tents, even along with his immediate descendants. And why? It's because he was looking for a city that has foundations, the one that God built. And what's interesting about this is that Paul makes this point, and also it comes up in Genesis 15, that the land is going to be given to, when God speaks to Abraham, the land is going to be given to you, Abraham, and your descendants. And so this future for Abraham's descendants, physical descendants in the land, it still applies today. It still is a promise today that will be fulfilled one day. And Abraham, when he's raised from the dead, will enjoy it, along with Isaac, along with Jacob, and along with Sarah. And so we can make a statement as believers in the death of believers. We grieve, but not grieve as those with hope. And we can even also plan to make a statement with our own deaths, leaving a legacy, or reminding people that we were those who trusted in God's promises, and God is faithful to fulfill his promises. And in that way, we can leave a legacy to those who come after us, that walk in the same way that I walked, just as I walked in the same way that Abraham did. So That's what I have for tonight. Any questions or any comments? Yeah, it's a great passage. It kind of seems like, what do you do with a burial passage? But there's profound theology here. Practical theology, too.
Maybe what Danny should have said was that the wife is to respect her husband in spite of his sins.
Yes. Yes.
That is so true. That is so true.
Yes. Linda, I totally agree with you.
Do we even need to have a marriage conference?
Danny and Linda are just solving all our problems right now.
Guest speakers.
Yes.
Just sit up front and talk.
Yes. We'll just let you guys go back and forth. We'll do that for a couple hours. And
that's it.
The marriage council is coming, isn't it? You're getting ready.
Yes.
For that.
Yeah. This is okay. This is all you need. Make it to the end. This is what you need. All right, let's pray together. Father, thank you so much for your promises, and thank you that what you call us to do in the fulfillment of your promises is to believe, not to work for them, not to earn them, but to believe in you because you fulfill your promises. We're thankful. Even in that, what there are things that we can do that make a statement about what we believe and the God that we believe in. And so give us wisdom on how best to do that. But also give us wisdom in how we can make those statements while we still draw breath today. So we thank you that Jesus didn't need a tomb like this because he's raised from the dead. And his resurrection means that Sarah will be raised, Abraham will be raised, and even if Jesus does not return first, we also will be raised because of your power and because of your faithfulness to fulfill your promises. So help us to live by faith in the reality and the truth that you keep your promises. We look forward to that day when you fulfill them, when you fulfill all of them. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.